Right, welcome back to another weekly Sheep Farm podcast. And this time we've got someone me and Chris used to watch many years ago. It seems to have been around a long time. He probably won't like me for saying that. But he's been talking about the things that we all talk about for years. And as we've just been saying off air, it's now truth. So welcome, Ollie Damagard.
Thank you so much, Tom. And a little surprise for you. It was truth back then. It was just that nobody was interested. And it's just that now it's coming to a point where it's hard to deny. And I've been down this rabbit hole 43 years. Can you believe it? It's like, give me a break.
How are you still
Come
here,
on, wake up, please, so I can go and jam and kick back and relax. It's enough. It's enough. And now with these fires from hell, come on, come on. Maybe we can go into that.
We're gonna go there.
I've got some very strong pointers to who's actually doing it to us.
Yeah, well, I've got a list of four things. I'm sure you could add, obviously, the things that we've been going through the last 2 or 3 years. We can talk freely on here because we've got private service, so it'll go on our website with this. The COVID nonsense. I want to talk a bit about JFK because I were into it. Right. It's what got me into it, into this side of it, and Judith Very Baker and all that side of it. The false flags, 9/11, the stuff we were discussing, and chemtrailing and weather altering. So I know you'll have
anywhere you
want to
go.
Yeah.
Anywhere you
want
to go.
Anything
if
you
I don't
to
know,
that,
I'll just.
No, I just want to say the first time I came across you all, it was Dom showed me the video of the Norway thing with the guy with the thing sticking out of his head. Do you remember?
The lady with the spike, the unicorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, the unicorn.
Yeah, I was blown away. And I was just saying to you, my missus, who's not into what those guys are into, she is, but she isn't. When I mentioned we were talking to you, she said, oh, that's the guy that predicts the terrorist attacks. And I said, yeah. And she said, I might actually listen to that podcast.
Well, in that case, thank you, Louisa, for listening. And maybe it's time for you to wakey wakey as well, yeah. Because there's at a point where it's like what used to be fun, ha ha ha, and making jokes of ha ha ha. It's not so fun when suddenly you got a flamethrower up your butt saying like, holy crap, what is going on? Yeah. You know, life is suddenly here. And this is like we were saying before, some of us was talking about 40 years ago was true. It was true then.
Yes.
It wasn't a joke then.
No.
And some of us have paid a very high price to get this information out there. I mean, I'm one of the few that are still here. There's a lot that have said bye-bye to this earth.
Well, let's say it's not career enhancing, is it, Ola?
Well,
and look at the picture.
It depends on what
phone,
career you're looking for.
That's a.
I've
got the picture on my phone, Chris.
Absolutely love her.
Yeah.
I mean, that one was sometimes I stumble across some real golden nuggets, and she was one of them. That was from them, from the blowing up of the government building in Oslo. And that was where these photos were being spread all over the world. Terror in Oslo, terror this. And there was this woman completely covered her face in blood, and the other one with a spike sticking out of her head. I mean, horror, horror. But I found a video of when they actually took the photos, and then suddenly you see, my God, what the hell? What kind of Monty Python show is this? And then five different ambulances lined up, and instead of taking this poor woman with this thing sticking out of her head, I mean, I would be slightly concerned if I was her, you know, like... Yeah. Brain sometimes it's not the best thing to put a stick into, so maybe don't whittle around, don't fiddle around, don't headbutt me, you know. Maybe an ambulance would be the idea, and a hospital, why not, if it's close by. Instead, they stop a bus, and then they lead all the people who were injured on the bus, and then the bus takes off, followed by an ambulance. I mean, these are the type of things that I'm just like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because then I don't have to persuade anyone. This is also what I try. I'm not trying to persuade anyone. I'm trying to say, listen, I found some things that might be of interest to you. Please look here, look there, look here, and look there. And by the way, I'm predicting this is going to happen. And then boom, it happens. How the hell could I know that? I knew it because here is step one. Here is step two, here is step three, and here is step four. You want to try it yourself? look for these things, and then you will be part of it. And now I have like, I don't know, I've reached millions all over the world, and I'm being sent stuff from all corners of the world saying, please have a look at that. Have you seen this drill? There's this going on. There's this security. This is the thing that I'm sort of like a hub from all this intel coming in about these type of operations, which is why I've been able to be as efficient as I have. It's thanks to so many people around me that have sort of say, oh, maybe he's onto something. Let me see if I can be of assistance and of service to humanity, because that's what we're talking about.
I think that video that Dom showed me, I don't know how many years ago that was, that was my first introduction to crisis actors, I think. I think it was. I don't think I'd seen anything like that before. It was one of those mind-blowing moments of what else could that be?
Yeah, well, I don't understand how anybody, I mean, throughout the world of propaganda during World War II, they were making propaganda films using crisis actors to simulate landing on a beach or what have you. This is no different. It's the same principle in a way, and it's just got more efficient and using better technology now to kid people. And as we saw in 2020, it's the same principle, isn't it? China, 2020, that guy was dead in the road. That was we showed that Chris Yonks ago, and a lot of other people have, where the actual company that took that is part of one of the fact-finding businesses. So they took the picture in Wuhan of the guy laying on the floor saying that was from a lone virus from a bat. It's on a fact finder company that funded it.
Do you know it's very simple. When you look at it, it is very simple. And it goes, as far as I know, at least back to the Roman Empire, where there was a small little group of, I'm sure there were psychos in those days as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there were.
A small little group that thought that, we're so much better than the rest of you. So how can we, the few dressed in a sheet with a flower pot on our head, how can we control you, let you make us into gods so that you will even thank us for being absolute slaves and going out and be killed in war? How to do that? And so they found some specific methods of how to tweak the minds of the ordinary person into believing exactly that. And in those days, that was before Twitter and fax machines and phones and satellites. How could a few in Rome control an empire the size of, it's massive. It was all the way up to the north of England. I don't know how far down to the Middle East. They say Rome was the center of the world as they knew it. It was. And so how could they do it? With a very few, a handful of methods. And this is what I've specialized in exposing, because these methods are exactly the same to this very day. Only very, very few. It's just like it's been upgraded, you know, digital 2.18 version, blah, blah, blah. It's still the same basic. The basic is the same. And it's all based on fear. So nothing new. This is the thing. Once you crack the spell, you break the spell and you say, whoa, hang on. Let me just stop for a little while here. What did he just say? Because I see myself almost like a master chef, you know, like a Hell's Kitchen or whatever. You give that guy Gordon Ramsay, you give him a teaspoon of whatever sauce, and he goes, yum, 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 yum. Yes, there's some cumin, there's salt, there's this, there's this. If you give it to me, I say, yes, it's brown. I don't know. I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. In this area, I'm Rain Man. I'm one of these guys. Yeah. It's my whole life that is in that whole thing. So here with these operations, it's just recipes. So what is needed? And then once you start seeing, okay, I call it like a terror pie, for instance, you make a pie. What the pie is a pie. It doesn't matter. It can be square, round, fluffy, it can be thick, it can be thin, it can be blue, it can be green, it's still a pie. So what ingredients are needed? It's like this, 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 and this. It smells like a pie, and it might very well be a pie. Let's check it out. And then boom, you take that box, you take that one, tack on, and there you go. That's it. Once the recipe, you see the recipe is there. What the hell? Because if that is the case, then this is not a natural thing. It's not a terrorist thing. It's the enemy from within, the ones that are using the recipe against us. And that is why I think I'm one of the most censored people on the internet. I tell you, I'm not kidding. It's brutal. But because, not because so much of what I'm saying, but it's because of these methods. Do not want them to be exposed, because once we crack that one, it's like David Copperfield, if he's on stage and everybody knows, oh, come on, now he's going to saw this girl, woman into two. Yeah, he does it with mirrors there and that. And bring on the next one. His career is over. And it's the same with these bad boys. We expose them, their career is over. Mm. When people start laughing, that's one of my goals. The next time one woman comes with a stick in the head and people are like, come on. I mean, bring out the ketchup. And I mean, you can do better than that. At least put two sticks. So it's like an antenna so she can add FM and AM, you know, like some kind of receiver. So it's a, you know, instead of us going, oh my God, we need protection. And then we turn towards these bastards that are the ones doing it to us, yeah, saying, please, please help us. And they're saying, well, the only way we can help you. And then they add to the terror pie and add, and this is where we are now. So I don't think your wife is laughing so much more anymore after COVID and all of these things, because it was okay before, because then it was only, well, these weirdos over there are saying bizarre things. They're saying this could happen. Yeah, right. And suddenly the whole world were in masks and locked in and all of these things that individuals, like I said, listen, it's starting to smell here. It's time to maybe wakey wakey, because if not, this might actually happen. And boom, there you go. So I see COVID as a blessing in disguise. In many ways, it was a great, not reset, but great retreat, because suddenly people had to face themselves and their lives and see, yeah, what the hell, how did I get myself into this? Mm. And these people, it doesn't really make any sense. How did they get into these positions? Maybe because I was too much into my own desires and greed and my family, my friends, my this, neighbors. I don't even know who they are. Homeless people in the street. I have no idea. I don't even look at them. Why should I? It's not my life. Well, suddenly it was all of our lives. So
we were all in prison.
Crisis. Yeah.
We're all, yeah, in prison. And I think going back to, like, it was interesting with, I mean, my wife, it was probably a bit more, I wouldn't say aware, but aware than your wife. They've had to put up with a lot with us, by the way, Ola, as no doubt you understand. But when that happened, her parent, my wife's parents, both of them realized, and they said, everything you've been telling us for the last 15 years or what have you is, and they're in the 70s. They woke up in their 70s and realized that everything they'd been voting for was just a charade. Everything. It's quite a, I'm so pleased that I didn't have a realization, that dawning moment in March 2020. That would have been an awful download.
It's brutal. It's, yeah, brutal.
That would have been awful.
And this is also why I think we have to be very, very soft on people. You know, most people that become aware, oh my God, I woke up like 6 months ago and now, yeah, I have to tell the whole world. Really, I mean, okay, where were you 41? Because suddenly, yeah, exactly, you know it all.
Yeah.
You know it all because, yeah, you understood in the autumn of 2019 that something was wrong. Well, yeah, I've been standing there for 40 years. Hello, hello. And at that point, nobody was into it. It's like, so don't point too much, you know, and be gentle on people, yeah, because what you are saying, what we are saying is actually, I'm sorry, your world is upside down. The, yes, world is inverted. Very little of what you've been told is actually true. And a lot of what you've been told is actually based on lies.
Yeah.
So it's like really how to, you know, and because just like all of these beautiful souls that have been voting and they've been standing up for what is right and climate change, we have to save the planet and all. And I salute all of these efforts that comes from the heart. But once you start seeing there might be a hidden agenda behind it, then it's not so pretty anymore. And then you are maybe one of these people that would fit into your farm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is that when people, by the time they got people clapping and banging pots and pans on the doorstep, the job was finished. They had everybody at that, oh, not everybody, but the majority of people at that point, because people have been lobotomized. That's the issue. The issue is that a lot of people cannot critically think anymore. And they couldn't before, but now, even less after they've been 3'd out, finished, they've had the three vaccines or the boosters and everything else that's gone on. That is paying a heavy price now. And from Chris's point of view, his wife is noticing it because she works in a close proximity to people. When you're working and you see them dropping like flies, there's only one elephant in the room. Well, there's probably two with 5G being turned on at a similar time, but there's only one elephant in the room, isn't there, really? And that's the only conversation that should be had anywhere in the world. And because it's not being had, we know that that's what they're trying to cover up. And I'm right there, Chris, out there. That's when she started realizing.
Well, yeah, she works in an office with quite a few people. And we had a barbecue the other week. And they were just all discussing. I wasn't really involved in the conversation, but they were all discussing how many people have been sick and ill. Mm. And a friend actually said, these were her words, they're dropping like flies. Like, people are off work everywhere. And my missus was looking at me, but I didn't really want to get involved with all these. Mm. I didn't want to...
You scare people. Opinion. That's the problem. You scare people. Yeah. Someone asked me the other day, why are people dying, Dom? And I went, do you really want to know the answer? Do I have to tell you the answer? And he went, he put his head down and he could tell. He was frightened because he'd had the jabs. His family had had the jabs. It's probably his children had had the jabs. Like you say, Ola, you've got to be careful with these people because one, they've got a lot of toxin rushing around the system now, on top of all the other toxins, and you don't want that to have a bigger effect on the mental strength. It's difficult, isn't it?
Imagine walking around with a time bomb inside of you. You know, you don't know if it's loaded or not.
No,
it's like I really feel. It's one thing if you were informed and you did it, then okay, fine, you made a choice. There you go, and now. Either you're right, we're right. If you drop, then you were wrong. If we drop, then we were wrong. You know, but there's like here, I live in Bali. We escaped to Bali here a few years ago during lockdown in Spain. Brutal in the area where we were. And here, a lot of the locals here have had to have all of these jabs so that they can work for people like myself, you know, Westerners coming here. Because during COVID, I mean, everybody disappeared. We were driving around this island for more than a week. We saw like 11 whiteys, 13 ourselves included. Yeah. You know, it's like we were gone, and including the financial whole thing just collapsed here. Some people in some villages here were starving. And then they said, well, the only way you can continue working is by having the jabs. And then they started, you know, there's a lot of local people here that are just boom, you know, and my 11-year-old daughter, sorry, I can't come and fix whatever electricity problem. My wife just died. They just died. That just died.
Horrible thing is, I'm sure those lot have had some quite grave moments, even going back 2 years, where it just hits you what's happened. Yeah. And you hear these
heavy
stories.
Moments. Yeah.
Heavy moments. Mm-hmm. And we're feeling this for the same people who were having a go at us for not doing it. But
But that is who we are, though.
We've shed a tear for them, if you like. Yeah. I mean, and yeah.
For many years, I don't know if Mark told you, we've got a natural health clinic, me and my wife, and I was saying that this is going to come and hit you via a vaccination. They're going to want to vaccinate the world. This was I didn't know it was going to be 2020 or 2021, but I knew that's where they were going to tie people in because it was coming. They were trying to force kids, anybody who couldn't work. They wouldn't get the benefits if they didn't get jabbed. They were bringing this in different countries. You could tell the strength was behind this vaccination push. I didn't know it was going to be COVID, but you could sense that it was. Bill Gates was talking about vaccinating the world and basically sterilizing everybody. And anyway, you could just sense it was going to be a health war, a war on health.
It's a war on everything.
Yeah,
it is. War on everything. And COVID is just the latest in so many of these vaccine waves. that have come in different shapes. I mean, it started in the 60s and it's just continued. And once you start looking into vaccinations, then it's like, I used to believe it. I mean, I'm jabbed with I don't know what. And once you really start looking into that whole agenda, it's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? What the hell is going on? And we're doing it to our children. Wait. What's before it's too late? Because the thing with this beautiful body of ours and the immune system is you got this body temple and it has layers of skins and all kinds of stuff to protect it, to keep things out. It's an enclosed system. It's not supposed to be intruded by other stuff. And so as long as we leave it there and we boost the immune system, it's made to repair itself. You even cut yourself and it fixed itself. It's like, wow.
Amazing.
That is miraculous. How is that even possible? Hmm. Terminator 3, you know, like, how is that happening? But then when you use the needle, you bypass all of these firewalls. That's the thing. And then suddenly the enemy, possible enemy, depending on what is being injected, is on the inside. And once you start finding out what's in these things,
I've got a 5-year-old, Ollie, and so we looked into it. Even though I knew the answer was not to have any, it still stresses you out because of the propaganda and the pressure and, you know, your friends calling you nutter, nurses and doctors calling you nutter. I had this nutter as well to tell me. But I looked into it from scratch just as a refresher because, you know, I had to give the information to the wife to make sure she thought we're on the same page kind of thing. And even just looking at the history of it, the history is a horror show. Everything from the day that guy invented that thing, Jenner started stabbing people, it's a horror show. Mm-hmm. And right up to now. But then I was in town, I went to the doctors the other day, and all the bunting's up for the flu jab. Literally cards saying, get this. Are you full? And my nippers had none. And touch mm-hmm. wood, she's very rarely ill compared to... Yeah.
I had a friend, right? Listen to this one, Chris. I had a friend whose youngster was full of life, won't sleep, not been jabbed. Mm-hmm. She went to the doctors and the doctors said, looking through the record, he hasn't been vaccinated. No, that's probably why he's not sleeping. These are doctors saying this nonsense. That's probably why he's not sleeping, because he hasn't been vaccinated. It's just insanity. We're just talking insanity here, aren't we?
But the thing is, when you look at how these operations are carried out, it's completely compartmentalized.
Yeah.
So that every little person in the machine thinks that they're doing the right thing.
Yes.
That they're being even benefited with bonuses and thank you so much. Here's a trip to the Bahamas because you've done so well, and that it's amazing. You would be like doctor of the month for having jabbed the, you know. So you get this boosting of your ego, including also financial profit, and you're being educated at universities that are really highly respected, but where does the funding come from? And then you start seeing the funding comes from the same. It's
the same NGOs, Gates. The same got people.
You got the Rockefellers, you got the Rothschilds in the background with all of these holy, and all the different studies that have been done in different areas are funded by the same people. And the solution every single time is their product, that just happens to make absolute billions for them. And so, when I meet highly educated people, I don't meet highly educated people many times. I feel I meet highly indoctrinated people that are dangerous, I would say, because they think they know. And that, so this is the truth and this is it. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I am on a daily basis almost unlearning things I thought I knew. Because it's like, oh my God, they got me there as well.
The wet fish moment. The smack on the face with a wet fish.
Yeah. Well, that's my constant companion. You know?
Yeah. Boom, boom. Yeah, exactly. Boom. Yeah.
Wait. What? Yeah. You know, but once you start seeing that this world is not mad, it's just upside down. Yeah. Evil has inverted it. So whatever we're being told is good, I guarantee you, might very well be bad, depending on who's telling you. And everything that is said to be bad, including individuals like that, might be pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if they ban this thing, I really start looking into it if they try to get rid of it, because like, whoa, 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 that might, I didn't know that. Thank you so much for pointing it out. But it's to be, live like this, you know?
It is difficult. I mean, you mentioned things started in the 60s, and I suppose we could go back even further to the Fetzer report and all that other stuff. But going back to the 60s, it's 60 years since JFK. Is it 60 years this year in November?
Yep. It 60, is indeed.
It's like, I know in the 1980s when I started reading books about JFK, I remember one of the first books, I think, was Jim Maher's late 80s. I think we were about 18 or something like that. That was the start of that. And then the JFK film came out and I was sort of hooked. And I remember watching something on, I think it was Channel 4 in Britain. It was like a false trial of Lee Harvey Oswald. And so they did a retrospective trial to show that he was guilty still, even though in the 70s they proved that, even though that was nonsense, the church report and whatever it was, that's already said it was more than one. And that typifies what we have had to put up with, because that was really the first live one that was so noticeably false, wasn't it? That, I mean, there were ones before, like Pearl Harbor and things like that, but that was the first live one that was caught on TV, etc., that absolutely fried people's minds.
You know, it's so interesting you say that, because that was the thing that woke me up in 1980, or woke me up, I don't know, gave me a kick in the butt.
I think you were
something.
Probably already awake. It's just the steps, isn't it? The big, it's left hand or right hand.
Little cattle prod.
Yeah, the cattle prod, yeah.
The thing that I know the exact minute when I sort of like, whoa, what is going on? Because I was super naive for quite a long time on my life. But it was when I saw the Zapruder film for the very first time. And by the way, I was a friend of Jim Morris before he passed, which was like an incredible gift for me to meet him. And my sweetheart Kim met him as well. We loved the guy. Anyway, so the Zapruder movie, where you see the final headshot, boom, hit, and the head goes back and to the left. I mean, I'm a simple person. You know, 1 + 1 = 2. I don't care if you're a professor and you say it equals 34. Sorry, it doesn't make sense. I need to get the logic of it. Otherwise, I won't accept it. And so here we say, boom, you throw a stone at somebody, the head will be thrown back in the same direction as from where the stone came from.
Well, if you watch a boxing match and somebody hits somebody there, the head goes backwards. It just,
there you go.
Or if it hits the side, it goes that way.
It doesn't jump forward at you and headbutt you. No. So it took me like maybe 42 seconds when I saw, saying there must have been a shooter there. But the official story said there.
Yeah.
So it took me less than a minute to figure out, no, that's not true. And it's taken me 43 years, and I'm still on the search of the complete picture. So the truth is, I'm deeply in love with the truth. It's so clean, pure, shiny. It just stands. It doesn't fear any investigation or criticism or anything like that. It just is. And then you got this pile of whole stinking crap that is called conspiracies that is piling on top of each other, trying to hide the truth, which is under it. So the truth is there. It's always there. It's just for us to get rid of the crap so that we see clearly now. Yeah. Boom. So 43 years ago, I saw somebody must have been standing somewhere around the grassy knoll. And we had the people seeing it. We had smoke coming out under the trees. That's it. There was somebody there. There's even photos of the individual standing there and also moving away. And that was the thing that got me started. And now, 43 years later, I'm actually in direct contact with the guy who fired the shot. It's very bizarre. His name is James Files. And he's 81
I've seen the video of James Files, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's sort of like full circle. And then this guy who did a monstrous thing, I mean, a horrendous ambush, that he was one of multiple shooters. There were shooters all over the place, if I'm correct. And what he did, I mean,
apart from the book depository,
apart from the school book depository. Yeah, exactly. But it's like what he did, horrendous crime to fire like 80 feet, 88 feet at somebody completely defenseless and blow his head off. What can you say about that? I mean, that is awful.
Yeah, it's,
and now he's like a hero because he is doing everything he can before he dies to get the truth out there. And he's been, he's now he is being, you know, they're trying to shut him down and censor him. And so it's his act horrible, what he's doing now, heroic. It's very twisted the way how this could become like that.
How does he feel about it now? I've not seen this.
You have. I sent you the video years ago, Chris.
Oh, God. Right. In 1994, he was filmed for the first time in prison. He was in high security prison. And this guy, he was only 21 when it happened. And he was just that very morning, he was asked from his a hitman from the mob, Chucky Nicoletti, who he was his private bodyguard and driver for, and also the delivery of arms to Dallas this day. He wasn't supposed to be a shooter, but he was an experienced killer. He had been a soldier. He had been recruited by the CIA. He was part of Operation 40. So he was a very experienced killer. And that weapon that he used that day, which was a Remington Fireball 221, had been used in two other hits. I mean, he was very experienced. And that very morning, one of the shooters backed out. And Chucky said, "Would you mind assisting me?" And Jimmy Files said it would be an honor because he worshipped Chucky Nicoletti. He was like, he was kissing the ground where he was walking. And for him, it's like he said, to blow the head of Kennedy was just like taking out the trash. I mean, he couldn't care less. None of them, they hated Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs. Files was also involved in the Bay of Pigs preparation. They're training the people. And so they all hated him. They saw him as a traitor. It was just like taking out the garbage. But then after this happened, he changed his name from Sutton to Files, and he went sort of under the radar. He became a hitman for the mob and also working for the CIA. He was taking part in many, many CIA operations around the world, all of them including involving death. And
wet work, as I call it.
Yeah, that's a nice word for it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what is it that makes it wet, you know?
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, that guy...
It's horrible, isn't it? Yeah.
That guy was an assassin anyway, and we were on about this yesterday.
Yeah,
any war, though, is getting innocent souls to perform horrific acts, isn't it? I mean,
but it's like they see themselves as soldiers, yes. You know? And they mob hitmen, they see themselves as soldiers in the families, they're soldiers, they're... Mm. You know, so they are... I mean, some people are snipers and come home from Iraq and shooting a lot of innocent people and get medals and stuff like that. Oh, my God, fantastic.
It's the same thing, isn't it? Just a microcosm of the same thing.
It's the same thing. It's just like, on what side of the fence are you? Terrorist, hero.
But you're still getting young men to murder people. So,
and why do they take them young? Because then they can mess up their mind and they can do...
Normalize it.
And once they're messed up, then they have them and then they can... get them on their way.
You can't imagine the feeling if you get to an old man like him and you know you've been responsible for.
It's not just the death, is it though? It's not just JFK's death. Look at what he did to the world. The trauma that gave the world, like Princess Diana getting knocked off, the trauma is just constant, isn't it? The uncertainty of the old Cold War nonsense, what was going to happen now because there's no president, everything that was around that, not just killing someone, it was the whole thing that triggered.
And that is why I think it's so important to really look into the JFK assassination, because the powers that took over that day, they really took a massive step forward, are the ones that are still messing with us. You know, it was a coup d'etat, a global coup d'etat. And the reason they did it out in the open, right in front of cameras, right in front of audience, midday, whatever, was to send a message to people around the world saying, he was number one, we took him out. If you don't shut up and stay in line, you'll be next.
Yeah.
And so many times when they, on a certain level, time interval, they make these type of statue and example just to say, back off.
It was very ritualistic as well, wasn't it? I mean, the dates and everything else was...
It's... Very often they happen on the 22nd for some reason in different months. And also you got certain periods of the year the fall is the often connected to fire, and the spring, I can't remember which one is which. I think it's fire, but it's connected to death, both of these areas. And then very often you have the timing can be very with numerology, the dates, the timing, the location. It's not if you have a sort of a moving target, then the time you forget about that. But if you got specific targets where you detonate something, or you have planes hit the building, or something go off at a specific time, at a specific date, look at that one, because then they're in perfect control and it will not be by coincidence most of the time. Very often there's heavy satanic, ritualistic, bizarre things going on in as part of these rituals.
I mean, just before we trip off JFK, and I know you did a lot of work with Judith Very Baker, going back a number of years ago. I watched a few seminars that you did with her. A big one, I think, was it the
Open Mind Conference?
Open Mind Conference, yeah, but quite a while ago now. She's a very compelling character, isn't she?
Oh, I love her.
Yeah.
I love her. She's confused and super smart. And also she's got a photographic memory. I mean, she can remember, it was the 11th of March, 1963. It was partly cloudy. I was freezing. I was wearing my red pants or whatever. It's like unbelievable. And this is why she is so important, because if you're not aware of the story around Judith Mary Baker, that's why I really did everything I could to bring her to the world, because I had no idea. There were like two major parts of the JFK assassination. It was just like riddles. I didn't understand it. It didn't make any sense. And then Judith Mary Baker stepped forward in the beginning. I thought, what a weird character. I didn't make any sense of whatever she was talking about. And then I started seeing, oh my God.
Yeah.
Look at that. And Jimmy Files is number two. And both of them extremely trustworthy. Yeah. I have not found anything around Judith that was not correct. I have not found anything about Jimmy Files, except that in the beginning, one time, he changed the amount that he was given for his part of that. Right. And I mean, God, no. I mean, can you blame him? He's sitting in high security there. He's you know, like, it's not easy for him to say, in a situation like that, you know, where he can be stabbed in the shower every day. And he used to live every morning he woke up. It was like, who do I have to kill today? Or will I be killed today? That was what he was facing on a daily basis, just by being there and then stepping forward, saying things like that. And he did not do it easily. It took years of persuasion from a friend of his who was trying to reveal this whole thing. And then his friend died under very suspicious, or I would say he was murdered, because he wanted to exhume the body of JFK. That was the thing that got him murdered. And that at that moment, plus that according to Jimmy, Jesus came to his cell twice and said in the middle of the night, he was completely awake. It was not a dream or anything like that. And Jesus sat down on his bed saying, listen, Jimmy, sorry, you need to shape up here because you got another mission going on. He said, the Father is calling you home. And Jimmy was like, oh my God, I'm fine. Let me die if that's the thing, you know, I'm ready. No. You have to do that. You have another task here. And he was like, oh my God, literally, really. And that was when his friend then died. That was the thing that made him step forward. When Jim Morris came to the prison, and another acquaintance of mine, Wim Dankbar, a Dutch guy, and they interviewed him. And for the first time, that's when he told the whole truth. I mean, he did not tell the whole truth because he's never ratted on anyone alive, but he told his part of it, and very detailed, extremely detailed, for no benefit of his own, an absolute disaster for, you know, for himself. He put himself, I can't even imagine. And
when you say Jesus, you don't mean James Angleton. was the head of CIA.
I know.
I know you know.
That was a bizarre individual.
Yeah,
but bizarre. That's often how they look. You know, these individuals, They're like very intellectual, very quiet. You wouldn't notice them in a crowd. And then they just sign off papers, you know, yeah,
100,000
let's just
die. Yeah.
100,000 here. Yeah, that's worth it. Let's just do that and just bury it, you know, like just, and you would never notice them.
No.
You would never notice them.
It's like they're playing Monopoly. There's no consequences. They don't have to make a decision. It doesn't affect them. There's a couple of books, isn't there, that Judith wrote. One of them for people to go and have a read if you want to read her story is Lee and Me. That was a good book. Me and Lee. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a really good read. Is that? And the story is, if you don't know, that she was the girlfriend of Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. I'm saying if the listeners don't know, in New Orleans, on the run up to the JFK ritualistic killing in 1963, and that's the bit that was.
Can I add to that?
Of course, you can add as much as you want. Oliver.
Okay, so the thing was that she was the one of the most intelligent people in the U.S. at the time. We're talking like early 1961.
And she was only about 19, wasn't she? She was only a young girl.
Yes, she was super young. And her grandmother died of cancer. So she thought, I'm going to find a cure for cancer. And so she started in her basement doing experiments of how to make cancer grow the fastest, because she thought if she can find out what makes it grow, then you can reverse that whole thing and kill cancer cells. You know, you just take away everything that makes it grow, boom, you find a cure. And so the CIA started noticing her because without her knowledge, because of she was being in different newspapers and student this and that and whatever. And then she approached, I think she approached a doctor called Alton Ochsner, who was the head of the Tulane, I think the Tulane University in
University,
New Orleans. And so her dream was to start working for him. And so without her knowing it, the CIA got her to New Orleans. And in New Orleans, she was approached one day in the post office when she was going to send a letter up. She was married. Lee Oswald was married as well. Both of them unhappy. And in the post office, she drops a letter, and this young guy behind her picks it up, and they start talking, Lee Oswald, and they become friends, and he starts following her around, and they fall in love. The thing is, if you ask me, he was his handler, her handler. He was there as her controller, because what he did was he introduced her into the reason why she was in New Orleans, which was to be part of creating a bioweapon.
We'll just say that Alton Ochsner was a psychopath. He was another. He injected two kids with the polio, his two grandkids, didn't he, with the polio jab, and one of them died.
That was psychopath or not, he was a highly respected doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a doctor that was used by many of the dictators in South America, Latin America. Mm. He was highly, highly respected, you know. And he was the guy also who was the promoter, the big voice behind the polio vaccine in the early 60s. And it was at that time where one of the people, a woman in the laboratory, found out that there were live viruses, whatever that means nowadays. We don't know what a virus is anymore, but a live cancer-causing element in these vaccines. So she went to Alton Ochsner saying, please, please, we had to stop it because they were just about to launch this whole thing for hundreds of millions of people to be injected with this thing. And he said, if you say anything, I'm going to finish you, you know, I'm going to destroy you. Anyway, this leaked out to the media, and Alton Ochsner found himself forced to call for a press conference. And that's where he injected his two grandkids.
Yeah.
One of them died within 24 hours. The other one got polio for the rest of her life. But still, they went on and they pumped it into, even this body here has been
and
pumped
mine.
With it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to hear that. But with a specific element that goes under the name of SV40. SV40.
Mm. She was called Bernice Eddy. Bernice Eddy was the doctor who was the whistleblower on the, that you were mentioned there. That's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that.
So anyway, that was, and this is, they claim now that no cancer growth or cancer tumor, when you in an autopsy, there's always this white thing inside of the middle of it, and that is connected to SV40. Some pathologies say, I don't know, but this is what they claim. And also they knew after having done that, that it would only take like 40 years, because before the world would see an epidemic of cancer cases. And that's what we see in the 80s, where suddenly people very healthy, very strong, very, you know, just like now after the COVID thing, and they start getting this very aggressive cancer, which once you start looking into it, SV40. But it was this SV40 virus, I don't know what
it's
what
a bioweapon.
It is.
It's a bioweapon. That's why I view virus as some kind of bioweapon now.
Yeah, but now there's a lot of question: is there such a virus, or are there exosomes?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like we've been told a lot. Once again, we had to unlearn.
Exactly. You know,
so it's a tricky one. But anyway, they found that this, whatever it is, that
it's their doublespeak, though, isn't it, Ole? A virus is doublespeak. It means what they know what it means. We think we know what it means, and it's probably something totally different. Probably, I'm using the word probably, or it doesn't even exist. Who knows?
Yeah, this is the thing, because this no virus has ever been isolated. Exactly. As far as, no single virus, not the HIV, not the polio, you know, nothing has been ever said, okay, there it is. It's only been created in Photoshop and in computer graphics and stuff like that. These spiky things.
Maybe the crisis actors.
They're crisis actors. They are. And there are many, like really heavyweight researchers in this area say that what they're pointing at are actually exosomes, not viruses. And that's a natural part of our system. But anyway, so Judith was part of a super, super secret operation where in New Orleans, where they had a series of laboratories. I don't even want to call them laboratories. It was in the kitchens and stuff like that, where they were trying to grow this cancer the fastest possible. So they had mice and they injected it with this SV40, waited for these tumors to grow. Then they killed the mice, chopped off the tumor, put it in a mixer, injected it again, put them under radiation, and did it over and over and over again to get. In the end, they had this this killer that could kill somebody in 29 days, 28, 29 days, which was the way Jack Ruby died, among others.
Yeah.
So Lee was the runner between these different laboratories. Judith was in the home of David Ferry, who was another one involved in the JFK assassination. The characters we see there, Jack Ruby, Clay Shaw, were part of this operation of creating this bioweapon against Fidel Castro. But then when suddenly JFK, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, completely changed behavior, you know, after being the one that almost started the Third World War, he just became this individual that almost like a change of person who sort of saw the light and, my God, what are we doing to the world? We almost destroyed it. And it's at that point where you suddenly see, I am going to destroy, I'm going to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces. I'm going to get rid of the Federal Reserve. I'm going to get the money back, the silver value back. I'm going to stop the Vietnam War. I'm going to this, I'm going to that. I'm going to. So
then boom, he's gone.
People were freaking out around him. And then that cannon that were aimed at Fidel Castro then got aimed at JFK instead. That's why we see the exact same characters from that operation as a center part of the JFK assassination. So Lee Oswald was actually trying to save JFK, believe it or not, and knew that he knew from the July 63, 29th of July, he understood I'm the one being set up as a patsy. And still he stayed and sacrificed his life for JFK, for Marina, his kids, and for Judith. I mean, you
it's
have
to... It's a fantastic story, isn't it? It is a
unbelievable.
Yeah, and the links, how it links into all this stuff, it shows credibility, and it shows how Jim Garrison couldn't work out what the hell were going on, because there were so many odd things, like they found all these mice in David Ferry's apartment, and they couldn't work out why he was doing all this stuff, and 30, 40 years on, when Judith comes out and starts talking, it's just there, isn't it? It's just there.
Yep.
And the other book's Dr. Mary's Monkey, isn't it? That's a good book as well.
Dr. Mary Sherman. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That describes that.
Yeah.
Do you know when I met Judith the very first day, first time? She was in Sweden. I found out that she was in Sweden, and I invited her. Or we were going to meet in Gothenburg, I think it was, or Stockholm. I can't remember. No, in Stockholm. Sorry, it was in Stockholm. And what we did was that we had decided to meet in a hotel where she was staying. So I was sitting there waiting. I came early, and I mean, I'd never met her, and I mean, I've only seen photos of her and stuff like that. And so I was sitting waiting, and then the time went by. Nobody, no Judith. And then suddenly this like 5'2" individual comes in with a big flowery hat and coming in from the wrong entrance, breaking all of the routine stuff like that. And it was Judith. And so I hugged her. For me, that was a major, major thing to meet her. And so I said, where do you want to go? She said, do you know any church we can go to? So we went to Otto Fredrik's church in central Stockholm. And she was just sitting there. Her feet couldn't even reach down to the floor. And so she was sitting there talking about like this and and Lee this and Dave, Jack this and Dave this. And this was Jack Ruby and this was David Ferrer and this was Lee and this was Clay and this was Carlos Marcello. Do you know? For me, it was like straight back into world history. And she was right in the center of the whole thing. And then I took her to a restaurant. She wanted a really big steak, a burger. You know, I thought, maybe she's vegetarian. Maybe she said, no. She wanted like a real. And I said, okay, I know one place down on Kungsgatan in central Stockholm. So we went there. This was in, it was pretty cold, maybe March, April, something like that, years ago. I can't remember when. And anyway, so we went there and we sat there. And while I was talking to her, I noticed that she was very distracted. And the thing she was distracted about was that there was this plant outside that hadn't been watered, you know? And she was sort of like, I was like, what is she looking at? And she was so focused on that plant. So I said, is there something wrong? She said, no, but the plant. And I said, so leave it to me. So I went up to, I spoke to the staff, you know, can you please, or give me something I can water the plant with, or if you wouldn't mind. And they were like, what? I said, and so they went, they watered the plant. She was super happy. She was back. She was focused and she continued to talk. It's like, and one thing that also she is, but these type of things shows me
the honesty.
This is a caring person.
Yes.
You know, this is not somebody who's like, look at me, I'm sitting here, I'm an alpha male, yo, baby. Yeah. You know, this is somebody who's like, what? She really got to me, you know, like, and another time she has started, I think she's stuck in the US, I'm not sure, but she was in Sweden applying for asylum, political asylum, for years. Sweden was like, well, I don't think so, but she was really trying, and she lived somewhere up north. I went to her home, and she had like made half of her home like into a museum of Lee. And so it was like his records, his letters, his this, his that, you know. So when I came there, she was playing this song from Lee's old record, you know, like the 78.
I bet you were freaking out, weren't you? Yeah, as a researcher, you just hit gold dust, haven't you?
Yeah, and then she showed me the newspaper from the 22nd of November in Dallas. You know, the original of everything, including Lee's this, Lee's that, Lee's this. My tour organizer, Johnny Cash, and I was there. I mean, like, and then we were there for some hours. She talks a lot. I mean, it's super interesting. But sometimes it's time to leave as well.
Yeah.
And anyway, she said, but before you leave, please let me just read these poems that that Lee and I loved to read. and or Lee read them to him normally. So I sat down and she started reading them, and she had tears in her eyes, and for me it was super emotional as well. And then my Johnny said, "Listen, we need to go." Oh my God, did she get upset? Because she said, "I am talking about the love of my life. This is the most intimate thing I'm sharing with you now. Do not dare to interrupt me." And Johnny was just like, okay, thank you for sorting me out.
Can you imagine, though, the amount of baggage that she's carried all that time, being involved in such an operation? Because she wasn't a friend of JFK. She didn't like him. She was edging on pro the anti-Castro type movement, wasn't she? But again, like all these people, were all young and impressionable within that time. Also, I'm sure she reflects differently now on the outcome of the whole operation.
But also, what Ollie was saying is interesting, because you're looking at a woman there who's reflecting back on her life and her lover who was murdered.
Yes.
So that's what impression you get from her, getting all that memorabilia out and stuff. So you're looking at a very human element of that story. Yeah.
It's the love of her life. Mm. She has five kids, and she had them in her mind in the name of Lee, not their dad, which has made massive problems in her family. Because she went what she called, she went vanilla. You know, at the time of the assassination, she just went under the radar. She's the only one alive. All of the rest have been taken out. You know, this is the thing also. And if you watched you watched one of these things at the Open Mind conference, it was like she told me, "Do never, ever say that you are my friend, because all my friends have died." And so in the intro I do, when I did that, I just said, "That being said, I'm very, very proud to call her my friend," you know, because...
Two fingers, but yeah.
But, I don't understand what that means.
Well, as in, that's a fuck you to the establishment.
It's like a middle finger.
No, not fuck you, but respect this individual for what she's been doing.
Fair point.
She's, instead of, this is just somebody on stage talking. No, this is somebody who's putting her life on the line for us to understand what actually went down and to understand who Lee Oswald was, also in the name of his children, you know, that have been living with this
lie.
This stamp in their forehead. Imagine being there, you know, looked upon.
I mean, and he was clearly murdered on TV. Yeah.
Another ritualistic killing.
Another ritualistic killing.
That anybody who knows something within this operation, this is what's going to happen to you.
I was going to say as well, I don't know if you two agree, but JFK, he did drag in the conspiracies right at the beginning. And do you think that was on purpose? Because not only to tell the populace, this is what we can do, but to tell conspiracy folk, I suppose, for want of a better word, that although it's clearly obvious to you, there's also nothing you're going to do about it as well at the same time.
What do you mean, the assassination itself?
Yeah, the assassination and the whole cover-up, which is clearly obviously an assassination and cover-up. But if you're thinking, but this is nonsense, but then the higher powers are saying, yes, it clearly is nonsense, but what are you going to do about it? And you're a small percentage that actually believe it's nonsense. Everyone else is buying the ticket, if you know what I mean.
This was in 1963, where the world got shocked by the Beatles haircut. I mean, you have to go back. This is shocking. Who would question anything from an official point of view? I mean, so the conspiracy theorists, or that was the thing that the CIA created, that exact, they weaponized these words, conspiracy theory, conspiracy theorist, to shut people up, to be ridiculed, they were very successful with it. I mean, nowadays, if you say conspiracy to anyone, their mind will say theory or theorist. They will just put these two together. That is an operation, a psychological operation, big one in itself, to shut people like us up.
And now, if you say that, it's added to right wing fundamentalists.
And obviously, the Beatles' first album were released on the same day, wasn't it?
No,
around that day.
No, they were in January '64. But I think that I really think that the release of the boy band
Beatles.
Beatles which
the manufactured
I'm sorry
band.
to say are it was a Tavistock product. Very yes. sorry to say that I loved them, and my God, have I sort of like found out stuff along the way. Yeah, very, very sad.
We've had to
very
flush a lot sad. Of things down the toilet, haven't we?
Yep. And I believe that the whole, that was part of diverting the attention away from the assassination. It was just when the people were like, whoa, still Kennedy got killed. I mean, that was unbelievable. And then look to the left. She loves you. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Peace.